Chapter 67. The multiple chute system automatically derigged, the night air tugging fiercely as three huge canopies streamed into the dark sky. Then they filled and burst open, and the monster vehicle slowed its express train descent and began drifting at greatly reduced speed toward the waves. Pitt looked up at the reassuring spectacle and began to breathe more easily. First hurdle behind, he thought. Now all the DSMV had to do was strike the sea on an even keel and fall through 320 meters of water without mishap before landing on the seafloor in one piece, right side up. This part of the operation, he reflected, was entirely beyond his control. He could do nothing but sit back and enjoy the ride with a small degree of trepidation. He looked upward and easily distinguished the C5 galaxy under the light from the moon as it slowly circled the DSMV. He wondered if Sandecker had released Giordino from the toilet. He could well imagine his friend turning the air blue with choice expletives. God, how long ago was it when he and the Numa team set up housekeeping in Soggy Acres? 3 months? 4? It seemed an eternity. And yet the disaster that destroyed the deep-sea station seemed like yesterday. He stared up at the parachutes again and wondered if they would provide the necessary drag through water as they did in air. The engineers who dreamed up this insane mission must have thought so. But they were thousands of miles from where Pitt was sitting, and all they relied on were a lot of formulas and physical laws governing the fall of heavy objects. There were no experiments with models or a full-scale test drop. It was win in one quick gamble, or lose at Pitt's expense if they miscalculated. Judging distance above water is extremely difficult by day and almost impossible at night. But Pitt caught the moonlight sparkle of spray tossed from the wave crest by the light breeze. Impact was less than 15 seconds away, he judged. He reclined his seat and settled into the extra padding some thoughtful soul had provided. He gave a final wave at the circling aircraft, stupidly, he realized. They were too far away to make him out in the darkness. The pilot was maintaining a safe distance to keep Pitt's canopies free of turbulence from the plane. The sudden, jarring impact was followed by a great splash as the DSMV struck in the trough between two swells. The vehicle carved a sizable crater in the sea, throwing up a circular wall of water in a blazing display of phosphorescence. Then it sank out of view, and the sea closed over Big Ben as if healing a giant pockmark. The blow was not as bad as Pitt had expected. He and Big Ben had survived the parachute drop without a bruise or a fracture. He returned his seat to the upright position and immediately began a check of all his power systems, considerably happy to see green lights sweep across the instrument console while the computer monitor reported no malfunctions. Next, he switched on the exterior lights and swiveled them upward. Two of the parachutes had remained flared, but the third was twisted and tangled in its own shroud lines. Pitt quickly turned his attention to the computer screen as he punched the appropriate keys to monitor his descent. The numbers traveled across the screen and flashed a warning. The DSMV was dropping into the black void at 61 meters per minute. The maximum descent speed had been calculated at 42. Big Ben was falling 19 meters a minute too fast. "Too busy to talk?" Sandecker's voice came slurred through Pitt's earphones. "I have a small problem," Pitt replied. "The parachutes?" Sandecker asked, fearful of the answer. "One of the chutes tangled and I've lost drag." "What's your descent speed?" 61. "Not good." "Tell me about it." "The event was considered. Your landing site was selected because the terrain is flat and layered with soft sediment. Despite your excessive rate of descent, impact will be less than what you encountered on the water surface." "I'm not worried about impact," Pitt said, warily eyeballing the TV monitor whose camera was aimed below the rapidly sinking DSMV. "But I am worried about a 30-ton machine burying itself in 10 meters of ooze. Without a scoop, Big Ben can't dig its way out of the muck like Big John." "We'll get you out," Sandecker promised. "And what of the operation?" Sandecker's voice dropped off so low that Pitt could hardly hear him. "We closed the play." "Hold on," Pitt snapped abruptly. "The bottom has come into viewing range." The ugly brown of the seabed rose up out of the blackness. He watched apprehensively as the desolate terrain burst toward the camera. The DSMV struck and sank into the silt like a fist into a sponge cake. A huge cloud billowed into the cold black water and curtained off all visibility. On board the aircraft, as if triggered by a mutual fear, the eyes of Giordino and Sandecker lifted and met across the top of the communications equipment. Their faces were taut and grim as they waited for Pitt's next voice contact. All anger had vanished from Giordino after he was released from his latrine prison. Now there was only intense concern as he waited for news of his friend's fate in the depths of the sea. Far below, Pitt could not immediately tell if the DSMV had buried itself under the seabed. His only sensation was of being pressed into his chair by a firm weight. All vision was gone. The cameras and exterior lights only recorded brownish ooze. He had no way of knowing whether the control cabin was covered by a thin coating of silt or entombed by 5 meters of quicksand-like muck. Fortunately, the parachute canopies were caught in a 3-knot current and drifted off to the side of the DSMV. Pitt pulled a switch, releasing the hooks attached to the chute's thick lines. He engaged the nuclear power systems and shifted Big Ben into forward. He could feel the vibration as the great tractor belts dug their cleats into the silt and began to turn. For close to a full minute, nothing happened. The belts seemed to spin on their gear wheels with no indication of forward traction. Then Big Ben lurched to starboard. Pitt adjusted the controls and turned the DSMV back to port. He could feel it edge ahead slightly. He repeated the process, careening the great vehicle back and forth until centimeter by centimeter it began to gain headway, picking up momentum and increasing its forward movement. Suddenly it broke the suction and lunged up and ahead, traveling over 50 meters before breaking out of the silt cloud into clear visibility. Long seconds passed, and a vague feeling of triumph began to seep into Pitt's body. He sat there quietly relaxed, allowing the DSMV to travel across the seafloor under its own control. He switched on the automatic drive and set a computerized navigational course to the west, then waited a few moments to be certain the DSMV was operating smoothly. Thankfully, Big Ben soon reached its maximum speed and was rolling over the barren underwater plain as effortlessly as if it was plowing under a cornfield in Iowa. Only then did Pitt contact Sandecker and Giordino and report that he was on his way toward Denning's Demons.